there we go. That's much better. This will be fun. I'm literally sitting on the toilet to record for this episode.
Amazing.
Yep. Okay, we'll do it.
All right, on that note, the files are open.
Files are open.
For the penultimate time.
It's true. We're almost there, intrepid listeners. We are finally coming through on our promise to actually record the rest of these. And lucky for you, or unlucky for you, if you're one of the fucking maniacs who would love for this to last forever, this is the episode before the end.
Yeah, it really is. And this is a bittersweet episode because we are saying goodbye to a Jess we've spent a lot of time with on this program in the land of film.
Well, technically at the beginning of the next episode, we will talk about a handful of movies that are also shot on film, but we'll talk about why no one believes they are. And so those are going to be roped in with the beginning of the SOV period.
Yes, we'll lead you into that with the last one because that will explain where we go into. But the next episode is going to be one shot all the way. So
One Shot Productions and SRS Cinema. I was telling Ron Bonk, who's the guy who runs SRS, is excited for that episode.
Oh, good. Well, honestly, we're going to probably weirdly have a lot more fun with that than sadly today. But listen, we're going to make it fun regardless. But it is apt that Will is currently doing this in a bathroom. So
to record this entire episode. So hope
very appropriate for some of the shit we got to harsh through today, but we're doing it so you don't have to, and you can still have this beautiful, pure idea of Jess in your mind. You can skip around because, boy, do we have some skips today, but there's some good ones too, so as always. But what could they be? Let's get into it because the first one is good.
Speaking of toilets, let's talk about Lulu's Talking Asshole. Which one of the alternate titles of this one that I really like is Hard to Swallow.
Yeah. Hard to Swallow. That's really the only name we can find for it. But
well, yeah, people stuck with Lulu's Talking Asshole. They were like, cool. And if you were, if you listened to the last episode, we're still, we're with Furby Films making straight up hardcore pornography.
And as it was advertised in Madrid in April of 1986, the first porn movie directed by a woman.
Yep. Which is not true on a couple levels, because as you know, we've talked about, Antonio Mayen says, you know, Jess was still mainly directing these, Lena doing all sorts of everything else. And it's funny, though, too, because I forget which one, but one of Roberta Finlay's pornos also used that ad campaign around this time. To be the first one directed by a woman.
Gotta move tickets.
Yep. Before we get into it, I didn't notice this till now. I don't know if you did, but Jess's alias for cinematography on this one, I had never seen this in any of the others, but Illuminato Leches.
Which is so good.
That's so cool. I would absolutely get a tattoo that just says shot by Illuminato Leches.
Does that mean bright milk? Shiny milk?
I guess so. But I mean, it would just be leche, though. So the Z, I don't think, means anything, or maybe it does. We're obviously not well versed in Spanish, but yeah, I think just like bright milk.
Okay.
What's this movie about, John?
Well, it's about Lulu and her talking asshole. So Lulu has. Well, Lulu Laverne is the character. This is directed by Candy Koster. It is one of those tax things for Jess and Lena. And also, Jess probably just didn't care to have his name on it. However, this is one of the more competent hardcore movies he made.
And yeah, this is fun.
And I think it's because, whether it's intentional or not, there's a bummer vibe to this movie. And it's quite evident in the flaccid penises on display. Never so many suck soft have I seen in a porno this gleeful. So
even in Jess World.
Even in Jess World.
I think a part of like why there is good territory here, and I don't know that this is true because I couldn't find Jess talking about it, but this is loosely, you know, jumping off of the success of a great porno, I think, by Claude Malot called Pussy Talk, which also has a really interesting, I think, vibe to it between comedy and Bummerland. And so maybe, my guess is Jess probably saw that one and him and Lena actually liked it. And they were like, cool, let's do it.
Yeah, he said, I do the hotel room thing really well. They're doing it. This is, yeah, I mean, he's the king of shooting these things in the, I mean, this is the most hotel of a lot of them. And I'm pretty sure this interstitial scenes of them, you know, in a photo shoot are probably just right outside at the hotel pool. Yeah, this is, but it's still fun because listen, Lulu, her pussy's getting all the attention. It's getting stuffed left and right, and the asshole's getting jealous.
Yes, and what's really fun here for lovers of the relationship that these two had is that Lena herself, of course, voices her asshole. That's really sad, but thankfully for us, Jess provides the dub for Lena's vagina. And there is a sequence where they're talking to each other, and it is so fucking funny. Like, it's just, I don't know, that's the sweetest shit ever. Like, what a good couple.
Yeah, and if you can see it that way, it's going to help a lot, because I tell you, this movie suffers from Lena's sense of humor, and you know, love her to death, my God, but like, not funny. Humor was never her bag, which is amazing that they tried it for so long. So they must have found it funny to themselves. So.
Yeah, I think they crack themselves up pretty often in this movie. and honestly, if you give it the good vibes benefit of the doubt there, it'll get you through okay. Like, it's, I agree with you, it's definitely not funny, but it is funny how funny they think it is. So
yeah, I mean, it's positively bizarre, and it's also really well shot for a cheap as hell porno, and I think well made for something that was clearly made in like 2 days probably, or a day.
It's, well, you know, we've talked about it. Mayan said they often shoot them just on their lunch breaks to do the hardcore film. So I imagine it was probably a day, and then maybe some pickups because Jess couldn't find other footage to cut in.
Yeah. Well, Lena's doing it all here. So if you want to see Lena in every possible way, sucking two limp dicks, you get it in this movie. So all you perverts can rush to the internet to find this one. Yeah.
And she also puts an Academy Award up her ass in this one. So
you come for the Academy Award scene for sure.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think, like, again, two thumbs up for Lewis talking asshole. You can go so worse in hardcore Jess realm.
And also, just to be honest, in the realm of, like, hardcore films that are comedies, most of them are really hard to get through. So anytime it's actually kind of funny, you know, I'm here for it.
Yeah, I think, like, Jess might get the comedy a little better with a hardcore one later in this episode, but we'll come to that. Right now, let's deal with bad hardcore comedy. This one is you can put this one right in the trash can, folks. This one's Lulu's pacifier. Yeah. Asshole's not talking.
This movie sucks. The only thing you could get if this gets you off in Jess world is just a classic thing. Look, someone's performing, people are watching, and then they fuck. That's it. I got nothing good to say about this movie.
The scene where they're trying to shove that soft penis up the woman is like tough to watch. It's like, yikes. That looks fun for no one.
That could be funny. It could even be, I don't know, I guess like National Geographic interesting or something, but it's not.
Yeah.
So it's not. And then I guess we can just move right on to the next one, which also sucks, but sucks less than Lulu's pacifier.
But it sucks.
It still sucks.
It sucks.
It has a great title. So the Spanish title is entre pitos anda el juego, which means between pricks walks the game, which is awesome. That's an awesome title. This is a classic porno setup, unsatisfied wife. Somewhere, I can't even remember if it's Throw or I read this somewhere on the internet. Someone says this is supposed to be a remake of Trading Places. I don't know if that's true. If so,
I mean,
that's a big, I guess, technically. But like, don't be excited by that, I will say. Because if it is, it's barely.
I don't know. That's tough. I know he says that, but like,
I can't remember where.
Thinking about it, it's like, I think it's just the title's a play on the, I think the Spanish title for Trading Places. I don't think it's.
That's right. That's right. You're totally right. You're totally
yeah,
right.
Yeah. But it would be funny if they did try to do a porno of Trading Places.
That'd be cool. I'd watch that.
Oh, absolutely. 100%.
I guess, for me, the only, the reason this is technically better than Pacifier for me is I do agree with Thrower and others who've said it. I do think it's hilarious when Lena and her friend are both just blowing dudes, but like gossiping while they're doing it. I think that's pretty funny. You know, like it's a funny idea and it goes on too long, so it does wear out its welcome. But that's at least, I don't know, that's a funny idea. And classic Jess, you know, how little he cares about male pleasure. He's like, I don't know, just pretend you're at the barbershop, but you're sucking dick instead of getting a haircut.
It ain't hot. None of, this is the most unhot. Shit. Hey, this is just bad bummer vibes, but not like in the way that the movie is like trying to be a bummer. It just, it looks like no one's interested in doing this and they know that they just need to get
this
some.
This feels a little bit like what we've talked about it, but what you call like, you know, Blackfoot porno, meaning like yep. Literally people's feet are dirty in like the 70s in San Francisco because it's like such squalor and everyone is doing it for $10. This movie feels like that.
Yeah. Not good. Let's move on to the next one now.
Oh, so frustrating. This one is almost something.
About to say, The Voyeur and the Exhibitionist should be... Oh. There's a lot going on with classic Jess things of voyeurism and peeking and all that sort of stuff, but...
The first, like, 3 minutes are really strong and a really good, like... A really good sad vibe, I think, and a genuinely creepy vibe for a little bit. Because the camera, so what's happening is like there's a, you know, Lena's in a hotel. There's a dude across the way watching her. She sees that he's watching, so she starts to perform. What's amazing for like 3 minutes is the perspective switches that are happening between the camera, because we can't see the peeper unless it's from Lena's perspective, and we can't see Lena unless it's from his. And then within minutes, for whatever reason, Jess throws that away and the camera can just be wherever it wants to be and it loses all the heat immediately. And it sucks because that would have been so good.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of that Sexual Story of O opening, you know? Yes. Like it seemed like it was in that zone and it just, it fell so far from, because yeah, you're right. Like this is the problem with some of these is like all the ingredients are there for this to be good, but like, clearly, it just depends on Jess and Lena's interest in how much they want to like use what's in front of them. Because like, otherwise, this is just, you know, we're in the hotels of Benidorm, and might I take a moment? Because we don't have much to say on this shit, but this we do. We are officially on a Severin commentary for an upcoming Jess Franco release. That's right. I think it was the last episode or the one before that where we talked about this movie called Thong Girls, Las Chicas del Tanga. So you can hear your favorite Franco bile people, your favorite Franco heads deliver a, I gotta say, pretty damn good commentary track.
We're both prone to, you know, varying degrees of insecurity or outright self, like vitriolic self-hatred for sure. But we both, as soon as we finished, we're like, okay, pretty good. We honestly just ran out of time. Like we could, I think what we learned is, because we did it in, you know, as we usually do, but we did it in like one just headstrong take. And as soon as the movie was ending, we were like, well, shit, we still have more.
Yeah, I mean, if you've ever listened to this thinking, I wish they could be more serious about jests and really,
yeah, really get into it. Yeah.
Yeah. You're going to get a lot more vitamins than you do on this show. This is sort of a quick field guide to this sort of stuff. But yeah, if you want to pick up a copy of Thong Girls coming out, I believe next month.
Yeah. The pre-order will be next week on Black Friday. I think that's like the 29th.
Yep.
And then I don't know when it fucking ships, probably before Christmas, I guess, is the goal with that sort of stuff.
Yeah. And hey, it's just us and Mr. Steven Thrower on the special features. So
that's right. That's right. And you can pick who,
yeah.
Who, who do you want? Who do you want to listen to? Truly though, if you haven't seen Thong Girls, as you know, from the episode, we love it. So if you are like, man, these Franco books are cool, but I wish someone did a, 150-page book just on Thong Girls. That's the equivalent of what our commentary is.
Yeah. Yeah. We do that movie justice, and we quite like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And what they Severin did with it, it looks beautiful. So we're very excited for that to come out. And listen, it's not going to be the end.
No.
We can't say much more, but let's just say it ain't the end of our of us doing that shit. So,
yeah, we got outside of Franco too. We got another.
Fuck, I need to get on that too.
We're heading to a different genre for our next one that won't be Franco, but hopefully that'll be announced soon as well. And then we can tell you.
That's right. This shit is going on disc.
That's right.
So, pick up Thong Girls. Listen to what we have to say.
Yeah, because if you're ever like, man, I actually do like this show, but these idiots cannot consistently put out episodes, just buy the discs that we're on. Every time you're mad at us, you can pop it in and hear us talk for over 90 minutes.
Uh-huh. Yeah, exactly. You say, we really got into nice Spanish history, Spanish film history, Jess history. It's all, listen, when we're paid, baby, do we put the work in.
Well, and
I'm paid, you better expect nothing but the fumes that we coast on daily. So,
yeah. And we're just fucking talking about Megalopolis, but not in any worthwhile way when we don't get paid. So,
exactly. This is what this business has done to us, turned us into bloodthirsty capitalists.
Right.
All right. We'll do some coming attractions soon, but let's move on.
On to the next. This is one that we hopefully will be able to soon, but we have not been able to track this one down. This is called Las Chuponas. We do have, thankfully, any of you in New York that were at the Spectacle Show heard us thank Frank Hinnenlotter, because he's the reason that Les Glutones is viewable at all. And I believe it's the same case with Chuponas. So Hinnenlotter hopefully is going to hook us up soon, and then we can finally see this one. What we do know is apparently this is a hardcore porno, but kind of in the realm of one of our favorites, Lace Brown Lace, where we are in like a nightclub with some dregs of society and shit gets really dark. Daniel White is also in it. Apparently it's an insert as far as the actual hardcore stuff, but the idea of Daniel White acting in one of the pornos is pretty exciting. And it also weaves in some outtakes of Katya Beinart from Lily and the Perverted Virgin. So we are very excited to hopefully see this thing soon. If we do, we'll toss on our little thoughts on it to a future episode of something else, But for now, if any of our listeners also, if y'all have it, we cannot find it. So if you'd want to hook us up, that would be sick.
And this is also the first film that got the Clasificado S stamp in Spain. This was the year 1984. The spring is when that started coming in. That was the first one that got slapped on. This got the first of his to get slapped with an S.
Wait, so that would mean then there's a softcore cut and a hardcore cut.
Because
S is not porno, right?
Well,
there's solid X, which is the hardcore.
Yeah, because they use Lily and the Perverted Virgin footage, apparently.
Yeah.
And then they have hardcore footage.
Also, maybe there's two cuts. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, technically, if you look at the production history of this, I mean, you go all the way back to 82 for Lillian, but then the hardcore footage is made in spring of 84, but the assembly of the materials didn't happen till the fall and winter of 1985, and then it didn't technically come out until spring of 1986.
Okay. Well, fuck, we got to see this movie.
Yeah, so it was spring of 84 when the regulations about sexually explicit films came in, and the hardcore films were then legalized at that point. Yeah. Okay. So, yeah, so this would technically be that. And listen, if you wonder what we're talking about with Classificado S, well, you'll know more soon.
Soon. You'll know more soon.
Going to be very good, and I'm going to not say any more. Okay.
And unfortunately, on to another one with an amazing title that is an awful movie. This might be my least favorite of the Franco hardcore films. The title in English is For the Babes, Warm Milk, which is awesome. Again, that's great. That's funny. It's cheeky. But this is another one of the like.
We know what the warm milk is in Franco world, and I don't want that warm milk.
Yeah, it's gross, but it's fun.
Hurdle. Yeah.
Yeah, this is unfortunately we're back in the like four stories of a couple different people in a hotel. It's terrible. As I've said with some of those, the only enjoyment I get is Antonio Mayans' borderline offensive portrayal of gay men when he plays them. I do find that to be a little funny, but that's it. This movie is
terrible. Yeah, it's terrible. And also L.A. Fontu and El Hotel de los Ligues. Those are the films that this is based off of. And if you go back to those episodes, we had nothing good to say about those either. So
but those are also better than this one, I would say. Again, not by a lot.
And that's just by comparison.
Yes.
Like this is a bad movie. And it is just so boring. And
it seems bored, and that almost never happens. Even in the ones that we don't like, because our comedic sensibilities just don't line up with Lena's and Jess's, she is usually at least having fun, you know, and that helps. But this one, it also feels like she's like, dude, Jess, we got to be able to make some other stuff. I'm so tired.
Yeah, and I know that like there is, especially online, and people who, you know, wonder about, because these Franco hardcore films, like, they are hard to find. So they do kind of like project this aura of mystery and like, are there these little gems to find? Sure, there's a couple we just mentioned, but for the most part, you're not missing much. And the problem also is, you know, some in the past, we've maybe been unfair to certain films because they don't fully go the way, you know, they don't fully become a Jess movie, but even those are much more rewatchable on a second viewing because they have the moments, like they have those Jess moments. And like, you know, ideas I've had about even like Voodoo Passion or Devil Hunter, and those are movies I'd seen a lot, but now that I've been through it more, you can still appreciate them, even though they're not like him technically at his best. They do get a lot better over time.
And we also, we're at times unfairly harsh because we love him so much.
Yeah.
Because we truly, like, when we say we think one of them is a masterpiece, we really mean, like, it can stand with other masterpieces that people often mention in, like, movie history, right? That's what we mean. So when we're a little more harsh than we need to be, it's because we just love him so much.
Yeah, and we're doing this for people who want to get into it. So that's the idea, is not, you know, we send you to the masterpieces so that you can come back to the other ones, and they're just going to be a lot better. And I think we said that from the beginning, but we just want to like make that clear that this is a way to get people into it. So if you're a Franco head listening along, you know, I hope you still enjoy it, but like, you know, you don't have to get mad at us because we didn't give Linda a 5-star rating.
That's the one that haunts me the most. Is how we tossed off poor Linda.
Hey, but that's what happened. That's the plight of Linda. We treated her like her captors, and so. But
well, that was also, to be fair to us, when we were watching 14 of these a week. So
yeah, you motherfuckers try that. Seriously. Right.
See if your brain still fucking works.
It's not as cool as it sounds.
No. Okay. On to one we do have some things to say about.
Oh, I love this one. And I can't wait to see it like better, you know.
Oh, I really hope someone restores this. I know no one's rushing to, and we'll talk about why. But this is Slaves of Crime, Esclavas del Crimen. So this is finally, after this really long streak of them only getting to make hardcore, they get to make something a little different.
Yeah, I mean,
this is continuing something that, you know, we've talked about, but we're back in the world of Fu Manchu. And so Lena here is playing his daughter, Sai Chin. So she's doing the, you know, thankfully when it's Lena, she's not as offensive as Jess is, where he does all sorts of things when he's playing an Asian character. Lena just puts on some really heavy eye makeup and honestly just looks super hot playing Sai Chin.
She's adorned with all the things you think she's going to have. Yeah. You know, that doesn't.
I just mean she doesn't squint like Jess does, at least. So that's helpful.
And what's cool is it is in its as best as it can trying to be a sequel to The Castle of Fu Manchu.
Genuinely. And they put in a lot more work than they normally do throughout, I would say, the whole runtime. As far as those connections and stuff.
They didn't have money. They had no money on this one. So there's
no castles.
Yeah.
There's nothing grand. Like, you can tell they didn't have any money, but you can also tell that they were pumped to climb back into this world. And they had a little fun with it. Yeah.
Kind of blow up your expectations you would have the Fu Manchu movie, according to Jess.
Yeah. Yeah.
So as we remember, Mr. Nayland Smith, his arch nemesis, the hero to go after that evil Asian man, Fu Manchu. Yeah. He's no longer called Nayland Smith. He's just called Naismith. And there's one shot of him basically in silhouette walking around the
I love Naismith.
He's silhouetted against a setting sun, just kind of being like, yes, Mr. Fu Manchu, I remember battling him. And then that's like it.
Yeah, it's true.
And it kind of rocks. There's a private detective who is no longer Al Pereira or Al Crosby or even Nayland Smith or even Naismith. There's a new guy named Marco Mandel. Let's say Jess is under the name James Lee Johnson also. Yeah. So, you know, this is exactly where you think it's going to be. So, like you said. Go ahead. You go ahead.
I was going to say one of my favorite things about this movie as well. Mel Rodrigo is back. You'll remember him from Sinfonia Erotica, who I think, personally, in my opinion, is one of the most interesting faces in the Jess crew. I love Mel Rodrigo. But the best part and one of the silliest jokes that they commit to with this movie is Mel Rodrigo is part of this group of people who are rock stars in this movie. But the movie itself and them, for whatever reason, thought it would be hilarious to say that they are the Rolling Stones. And when you first hear it, you're like, oh, that's a weird, they're going to make a joke about these delusional rock stars. But no, the movie, and none of them look anything like anyone involved with the Rolling Stones, but the movie just says that they are the
Rolling Stones. Yeah, it says they're the Rolling Stones. Start Me Up had just come out, you know, Jess was probably pumped. So maybe he I don't know. Maybe he just thought this will help boost sales if we advertise the Rolling Stones being in this movie.
I haven't looked. We should look up if there are posters. Is there any posters that like actually say that? Because it is. Because to me, it just feels like they're.
It was picked up for distribution, but it was never released theatrically.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I bet there's no posters. I'm going to guess nothing ever materialized.
Oh, God. I would kill for a poster of a Jess Franco movie that says starring the Rolling Stones.
Maybe that was a reason why they couldn't get it out. I mean, Who knows? There's a lot of things with names that are not right in this. Naismith, the Rolling Stones. Also, Cy Chen is not the name of the daughter. It's a reference to the actress who played the daughter in Blood and Castle of Fu Manchu. Her name has gone under Sumeru. I mean, right after he made his movies, they decided... what's his name? Oh, I've already forgotten. His name was the producer.
Wow.
Harry Allen Towers. Christ.
Thank you.
It's been a while. We're dusting. A little dusty in this area. Suffice it to say, we have better things coming and we're excited to close this out. But
don't you, again, just to tease it, our SOV episode and a couple extra movies is going to be truly, I think, impassioned. And I think maybe the first on record, I would say, good discussion about them. Because even someone like Tim Lucas, I was listening to an interview with him the other day about the SOV stuff. And he basically just tosses it off as well. He's just like, meh, you know, they're whatever. There's something to them, but not much. But we are going to correct that mistake.
Yes, we are absolutely going to correct that mistake. And... you know, just to, I don't know if anyone truly like can figure out what, I mean, I know what Sax Rohmer called his daughter, but you know, if you go all the way back to Daughter of the Dragon, she's called, what is she called in that one? When Anime Wong plays her, Princess Ling Moy.
Oh, okay.
But that one,
tell us the lineage.
Yeah. I mean, this is really kind of, if he was thinking of one movie from his past, it was probably Daughter of the Dragon, because this is very similar plot. It's where Fu Manchu has been vanished from, you know, he's dead. And so the daughter is taking up his plans of world domination. So.
And they're still their psychic connection, which I fucking love. I love how they do it in this one.
Okay. Well, look, we can just talk about that then. The psychic connection, you know. It makes you think of Venus and Furs. It makes you think of Virgin Among the Living Dead, because she connects to him and talks to his spirit when she's praying at this altar. But when he speaks, it's through the fluttering of trees and leaves on branches. And I mean, I agree with Thrower. It would have been cool if like there had been a little more sunk into that idea. But even the way we have it, it's still pretty... it's still pretty cool, because this movie gets the closest, second closest of the movies we talked today that get back to kind of those early horror-esque, you know, supernatural, truly dreamy Jess worlds. And I think the reason this one gets so shit on by people, and even Thrower, and I think he's being a little unfair, should have taken a break like us. And not-
I do, yeah. Well, we talked about it before. I think he went too fast at the end of this project.
Yeah, I think he did. And because I think there's really a lot to like here. And it's the sex crazy drugs from Blue Rita and Girl from Rio are back. I mean, this is really more of a Girl from Rio kind of redux, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's just using the Fu Manchu as the hook, I would say.
Yeah, but those scenes with the Fu Manchu's ghost really are enough to whet the appetite. And there's really enough of that deliriousness. I mean, it's like that world of Jess of the past encroaching with sort of the Benidorm cheapness of the hotel rooms, you know? So like, but I think it works. And I think if it's restored proper, it's really going to work. But
I bet the psychic stuff is going to be really even more beautiful than we think it is. If we can see this puppy cleaned up.
Do you think it will get cleaned up?
I do. I think it will be, my guess is the first people that do it will be like 88 films or some shit like that. And they don't do just much, but for some reason, I don't know. I think they might.
Did they put Devil Hunter out?
They did Devil Hunter and they did Bloody Judge. And I think that's all for Jess.
Weird choices, but maybe that's what they had access to.
Well, especially back in the days when they put out Devil Hunter, 88 was truly just whatever they could get. They have, you know, I will say they've definitely done a good job of getting themselves together as an outfit.
Hey, we love Devil Hunter and we love Bloody Judge. We may not love him as much as some of the others, but
Yep.
I'm actually excited to go back into Devil Hunter and see it again.
I think it's going to, I think it'll lock in a bit more.
Well, you know what? I'm going to take that as an opportunity to then say, upcoming shows. We got some big ones coming up very soon. December 3rd at the Music Box Theater, home of the dark.
Sorry, that was someone was some from the FCC is here.
I gotta be careful. Maybe I should beep that.
Just for this one, since there's a guest, truly, you're never gonna have to hear that shit from me again. But for this one, just do it since there's a guest with us.
I remember. Yes, December 3rd. We are gonna be showing Scarecrow in a Garden of Cucumbers, the long lost film by Holly Woodlawn and starring Holly Woodlawn by Robert J. Kaplan, the director of Gums.
Yeah, Gums is the Jaws porn parody, if you haven't seen it. It's honestly a
Dick
really good
sucking mermaid. Yeah.
it's a pretty fun movie. Our buddy Liz Purcell showed that on film in New York at the Alamo Draft House pretty
That's
recently.
true. Yeah. And
Thanks
is
for
it? Yeah,
that,
I mean, it's in the same vein as Scarecrow in a Garden of Cucumbers. So,
Yep, we said it if you're at our Chicago shows, but just a little to whet the interest outside of being a lost film with Holly Woodlawn, and one of her biggest roles outside of the Paul Morrissey stuff, I would say. But you also get Lily Tomlin's voice because she was running with this crew still, and you get Bette Midler's voice, and Bette Midler wrote two of the fucking songs for this movie before her own records started coming out. That's pretty fucking sick. So if you are interested in that incredible art scene from the late 60s, early 70s, and throughout the 70s in New York, this movie is absolutely for you. And we will have special guests. Caden Mark Gardner is going to be joining us, and Willow Kaylin McClay. And we are doing these screenings in conjunction with the release of their new book, Corpses, Fools, and Monsters. So yeah, come on out. This movie is a big deal. It was truly thought lost forever.
Yeah, this will be the Chicago premiere basically of this movie. So
Yep.
you're gonna want to come through. It's gonna be really fun. I just realized the other day we double booked this. That night, it's a Tuesday.
Is
Yep.
it really?
So if you want the full package that night, and you do, when that movie's done, we're really good at scheduling
You
these things
sprint
out.
down the fucking street right behind John.
You can sprint. We could probably take a nice leisurely walk. It's about a 15-minute walk over, and we would still be able, because you can get your seats at the Alamo Draft House online. That's right. You're gonna hustle over at 9:30 to the Alamo Draft House, and we are gonna be showing the fantastic Count Dracula's Great Love, starring Paul Naschy. Just one of the best of 70s Spanish horror, of that particularly hypnotic, moody gothic vibe that you can only get from stuff of that era. And I really think this is one of the best Naschy films, hands down.
Yep, no argument for me there.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So if you haven't seen it, yeah.
Yes,
If you
come
haven't
through
seen
the theater.
it,
And you don't, no one fucking chose that movie. Come watch it in the theater. It'll be amazing, truly.
Yeah. It's if you are a fan of all that horror Hammer shit, and you're like, could it go just a tad bit harder and be just a tad bit dreamier and maybe a tad bit stuffy? This movie's for you. So come
Yep.
through. And then
2 days later,
2 days later,
we'll be
December 5th.
back at the Davis for another trust fall. And also, y'all fucking rule. Tickets are already moving. They started moving the second the trust fall the other night finished, which rules. We're gonna be showing, I guess say if you're listening to this episode, you might be interested in coming to this movie. We're gonna show a movie by someone we care about a lot, and
Someone
we'll
we've devoted a lot of episodes to.
sure. Yeah, that's right. We're doing it again. It's Robert Zemeckis' Welcome to
Yeah.
Marwen. Covered at great length in Corpses, Fools, and Monsters. But yeah, Caden and Willow are also big fans of this movie. So they were down to clown and show something that we really wanted to show. So come pack that shit out again, because that trust fall the other night was a great time, great vibes, beautiful stuff. And we are going to absolutely continue that, and we are done worrying about if we should or shouldn't show stuff anymore. We're showing whatever the fuck we want. It's going to be great.
We're free. We're free from prison. We're just letting this shit go. I mean, our last one was big. And yes, if you're a Chicago person, especially if you're a Chicago person who's a fan of this podcast, specifically this series, you'll probably want to come.
Yep. That's right. We'll be showing.
Who could it be? What director's work could we be showing? Well, let's just say this is the culmination of a life spent working in this genre that they helped create or straight up created, and this might be the best.
Just might be.
So you're going to want to be there for that, because that this is going to be fucking incredible, and Willow's going to have some really cool things to say about it. So we couldn't be more excited for this one.
This is a big one.
Yeah. Okay. Now, should we get back to the show?
With that said,
I just want to remind you, every Tuesday in Chicago.
What's the next one? Because, what's the after?
So this Tuesday, I'm not there because someone begged me to do their birthday there that night. Hey, no judgment here.
When I saw that one go up, because you didn't tell me what this month was going to be, right? And so I looked and I was like, yep, Count Dracula's Great Love. Absolutely. And then this next one, I was like, I have never been more surprised in my life about a movie that John loves enough to show. And that's not an insult to the movie. I quite like that.
Yeah.
I was like, really? Didn't see that coming.
Ain't me. I didn't do it. So, but hey, I guess if you want to go support it, go do it. But
it's a fun movie. It'll be a fun show.
Yeah, but we'll be back there on Tuesdays. Yes, Count Dracula's Great Love, followed by the absolutely fantastic Japanese version, the original of Dark Water, followed by, I think, a still very underrated film that I think has a lot of pleasure, especially around the holiday season. Ghost stories are always great right before Christmas. So we're going to be showing The Haunting of Julia.
My best.
And I got some, I'll tell you, because Will doesn't even know one thing for January. We're going to try themes during Terror Tuesday. January is going to be Frozen. It's going to be all wintry set for us.
Yes, good choice.
And every proceeding on, I'm going to try to actually theme these up, because you all have been coming. The numbers have been going. Alamo is happy. So that's good. Okay. Enough of that.
We are back. It's been a while. Jess is back with Golden Films for a movie that is unreleased. This is a movie called Teleporno. We are told it was a parody of The Groove Tube, which, you know what? It probably isn't good, but I would like to see that. To me, the only important thing here to talk, because we will return about it, this starts the relationship with, well, doesn't start, but talk about the relationship with producer Emilio Larraga. Who we will return to later in this episode, because that's someone that Jess fought a lot with. You got anything to say on that one?
No, I don't know anything about it. We can't see it. These are unreleased, and all three of these, well, actually there's four, yeah, in a row here that we're going to have to get through, but one sounds very tempting.
Yeah, and we've talked about that one in the past from the suitcase episode when Jess and Lena ran away together on the Patreon. So you've heard a little about it if you support us there, which we appreciate. Next up is Brigata Story, which is another unfinished one. We don't really know shit about this.
We know it's X-rated or S-rated. That's all we don't know. We know that Lena's in it. And Jose Llamas, their stunt cock around the office. He's
our poor bisexual, who's not a bisexual, but was a bisexual to help them out with a penis that works in these movies.
Whatever gets the job done.
Our boy, he only liked boys, but he figured out how to like girls on camera.
Yep. So we don't know much about that one. We know maybe a little bit more about this next one. Tribulations of a Cross-Eyed Buddha. Great title.
Another great, yeah, sick name.
Great title. This one was apparently completed and edited, but it didn't have on-screen credits, so maybe that was the reason Golden Films didn't release it. I don't know. I mean, it's some sources claim it's a children's movie. So,
yep.
Tribulations of a Cross-Eyed Buddha. Get your kid to shut up and take him to that one.
Well, it sounds like, what's it fucking called? El Busco del Dragon Dorado or whatever.
Oh, like yeah.
That kind of vibe, probably.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah.
It was probably a kid's movie that featured a topless woman.
Yeah, it was probably like Antonio Mayans' Children Again in a movie for every scene except for the one where they were like, okay, time for a stripper.
Yeah. Hey, they do it differently over there.
It's true. But the next movie.
I'm not going to be racist and say that that's just typical Spaniard behavior. Not going to do it.
Wow. What a hero.
Next one. Ooh, baby.
So this movie is called SIDA, La Pasta del Siglo Viente, which means AIDS.
Can you switch those? Wait, can you? That's interesting. Those four letters.
Yeah, what could
an anagram of something?
Yeah, what do you guys think? What is SIDA backwards?
Not even backwards, more jumbled.
Yeah, it's
true. Could be Adidas almost backwards.
It's true. It just means a diss. Everyone's like, you idiot. That means a diss. That's not backwards. Hey, look, I'm sitting on a fucking toilet in a bathroom.
In the toilet right now.
So. I've been scrubbing carpet all day. So give me a break that I can't read backwards right now.
Yeah, he's got shampoo fumes just like.
Oh, my God. Yeah. This fucking headache.
Well, what is that? What do those words spell? If you take them Scrabble style and you switch them around.
Mix them all up and you get AIDS. The plague of the 20th century is the name of this fucking movie. AIDS, the plague of the 20th century. And yeah, like if you heard the Patreon, you heard us lose our fucking minds about this because this was supposedly a reworking of Shining Sex. But instead of aliens coming and destroying people via pleasure, I guess they do it with AIDS.
Do it with AIDS.
What? It's one of the like most crass bad ideas I've ever heard for an exploitation film, and obviously that means we are on fire.
I need it. Yeah,
this is a sad one as well. I will say,
how did this not get released? You just put it in Hong Kong; it would have killed.
Well, we know how. So this was a fight between Golden Films and Eurocine, the two big daddies of Joe Franco's career. So what happened here, which is insane. Let me make sure I get it right. I might switch them up here, so forgive me if I do again. A lot of fumes in my head. But so Golden Films and Eurocine are fighting because they each have a piece of this, right? So Golden Films has the original negative, but with no sound. Eurocine has a work print version of this, but they won't give it to Golden Films, who are supposed to release it, unless Golden Films gives them back the negative for Golden Temple Amazons, which they say they owned. And let me just say,
would fight over that.
Everyone, fuck everyone working at those places in that moment, that someone gave a fuck if they had the negative of Golden Temple Amazons. Well, we could have been able to see this movie. Please, in the history books, let's swap that shit and we can let Golden Temple Amazons disappear into the fucking ether.
It is funny that that was what they were like. We really need Golden Temple Amazons
over
here. Absolute worst films in his canon. And it's like, and it's a shame because, like, hey, listen, we've said for over this entire show many times, Shining Sex is one of the undisputed masterpieces. That's in the top five for me, probably for Will. It's just at his best and would love to see that reworked. He's done this theme many times, but with this, it sounds pretty cool because not only do you get Golden Films and Eurocine, but again, his French brother, Jean Rollin, was paid to shoot some footage.
Eurocine, yeah.
Yeah, he was, again, brought in to finish Jess's work and I guess decided against it because a la John Landis, who we mentioned earlier, there was a stunt involving a child that he thought was too dangerous and he didn't want to do. So, 1 point, Jean Rollin, 1,000 no points to John Landis,
oh,
child murderer.
Yeah, that's
war right. Criminal. probably pedophile. I'm going to assume pedophile. We're just going to say that without no alleged.
I actually think, I don't think that's true, but what I know is worse than that is that he was a child rearer and birthed one of the worst things that's ever happened to movies. So we can
put that on.
And also just, y'all know how European films worked and how Asian films worked at the time. If this stunt was so dangerous that one of these directors was like, I won't do it. I can't imagine. Was this was probably on like Fatal Termination level or some shit. They were, you know, like just holding a child out the window, like while a car is driving by their hair.
I read somewhere online that someone alleged that it was a scene involving a child trapped in a burning house.
Jesus.
Yeah.
Yeah. They were like, no, just stay there a little longer. We'll get the shot. It'll be fine.
It's hot in here.
She's like throwing up. She can't breathe. They're like, hold it.
Un hot. What's the word? Fuck.
No, I know. Stick with un hot.
It's un hot in here.
Un hot. Yeah, so honestly, though, we've been trying to buddy up with, this was still Marius Lasur at the time, who's running Eurocine, but his son, Daniel Lasur, who's the rock star that runs it now, we've been trying to buddy up with him, and if so, we are definitely, even though obviously I'm sure Thrower has already tried, but we will continue to ask if anywhere in the vaults this word print still exists. And I guess with that said, should we move on to back to the world of pornography that sucks?
Just want to say, with the Rolon connection, we get one of the greats, Francois Blanchard, in the film, in one of my personal favorite, hope to show it one day, The Living Dead Girl by Jean Rollin, one of the most heartbreaking, one of my favorites of him, hands down. She appears for the third time in a Jazz movie, one being Golden Temple Amazons. But also, she's Melissa, the infamous Melissa of Revenge in the House of Usher. So it is cool to see her here. And I just have to do my due diligence and say, if you haven't seen The Living Dead Girl, stop this podcast, find it.
Yeah, and honestly, that's more important than finishing this episode. Watch that and then come back.
Absolutely. Okay.
Next up, we have a big change. Antonio Mines has talked about this at length. Him and Jess actually argued a bit on this stuff. So basically, this is where Jess made a bad decision and decided to spend more money on these adult films. Mines told him it wouldn't work, told him he couldn't do it. This is kind of the beginning of where we're leading today to end this out. So basically, even though Mines personally traveled around abroad to sell these movies, the next two we're going to talk about, to make their money back. And he did sell them, but not enough. You know, it wasn't enough money. So somehow this movie has a big budget. We're talking about Jess's reimagining of Dynasty. So Jess has decided to do American television shows that are popular at the time.
This is such a stupid idea, but I'm here for it. So let's get into it.
Well, yeah. And so this one's called Philastia. And I will say, in my opinion, this one opens really strong with a cool prismatic image of a penis and a hard one, too. That's where the budget went. Maybe the budget was for the Viagra to get someone finally excited in these movies. But yeah, it starts pretty strong. And then for me, really doesn't do much for me outside of a couple pretty striking things. I won't even spoil it, because if you're going to put yourself through this, you deserve the surprise of what kind of mask a person is wearing and what they're doing while they're wearing it. I will leave that for those of you fool enough to do this with us that are going to watch this movie.
Yeah. If you're a fan of Cocktail Special.
Oh, you know,
yeah, listen, all those limp penises are back. The limp peni, it's all there. Yep. Fucking Lena just sucking on these dead, probably like too much coke and booze penises.
Yeah. Well, and again, also just gay. So many of these dudes are also just gay. And they're like,
yeah, that's true.
I can't do it. And he's like, Lena can make you. Lena can make you. But
it's like they have the script supervisor holding up naked pictures of men off screen. Yeah, I mean, that could be what happened there, but they could have maybe made those pictures a little better because
stakes for the opening. Outside of the opening, it's the last time we see one.
Yeah, put it in the trash. However, this next one, Do we put it in the trash?
Hell no, we don't. We saved this motherfucker. So this time they're doing Falcon Crest, which if you don't know what that show is, do not worry about it. All you need to worry about is that Jess and Lena and Antonio and everyone involved made a pretty fucking good time movie out of it called Fallow Crest. This definitely also is very reminiscent of Cocktail Special in a certain way. But the big thing here for me, I'm sure the same for you, one of the most disappointing things when you get to Jess's directly hardcore films is the fact that they are so fucking vanilla. They are so boring, and I don't know. There's just like not a lot of life to them. There's no perversion to them. Really no taboo busting for the most part. But thankfully, Jess was like, y'all, have you seen Falcon Crest? What if they all fucked?
That's the premise, and they do. They fuck. There's some scenes. Listen, if you think that a certain scene in a movie called Sadomania is too much,
there's a sweet little, a really cute little white dog who really gets in on the action in this movie.
Not as comical. Well, let's just say maybe you can't have as much distance from said bestiality as in a masterpiece like Sadomania, which is clearly, clearly fake.
Yes. No, this is not. Just if you are doing this journey and we've made you nervous now, we're not like at the level of like Mojica Marin's movies, like Coffin Joe's pornos. That is bestiality that will haunt you forever. And I truly regret seeing it. But this definitely is not, you know, enjoyable to see happen, but it's not as extreme as like some of the Brazilian porn. Anyway, on to more fun things. This movie has it's fake, but has some shit eating. It's got some actual S&M, some like whipping stuff. It's it's truly pretty deranged, I think, this movie.
And it works because it's so deranged.
Yes, it's finally fun. And you can also feel it with the cast and with Jess. Jess is interested in this movie because he's doing some actually interesting things. Also, maybe some of the most over-the-top mentally handicapped characters that we've had in the Jessverse, and that's saying something.
And they're back, too. One of them is from Virgin Among the Living Dead, of the genre stock footage of zombies that was made. So he gets to fuck this time, or rape more accurately.
This is true. As we said, this movie's actually back in pretty perverse territory.
This feels nasty. Like, this is like, if you were like, you needed sleaziness, like this is we're at water power level with this one.
Almost.
It has that same level of griminess, but also like, if this movie were to be remastered, I bet would look great.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, even the reason we mentioned Cocktail Special, loosely, if you don't know Falcon Crest, it's a family of people that make wine, right? They live on a fucking vineyard. So that's where we're at with this. The wine, their most famous wine, this family, is made with a little extra ingredient, a little bit of that milk. And
for the babes.
for the babes. And in this movie, there's, of course, a great moment where they make someone come in a glass and they'll pass it around and enjoy it. But I think the funniest gag for me is that the whole setup of this is that why this family is famous and successful with their wine is because they say that the original people fertilized their orange trees with cum.
Yeah, that's a great line. Just
so funny.
Yeah. This begins... I have a theory, because maybe not the following film bears this, but this film and the one that's going to come after it, I wonder if Jess saw Toby's Texas Chainsaw 2.
I think so.
Because there's just something about the perversity and the black comedy of that movie. I don't know, you know, it kind of made me think with like how the family has their special ingredient. Maybe that might be a stretch, but
I think you're right though, because of, again, what you said, not the next movie we're going to talk about, the one after, it very much hangs out in the same room as Texas Chainsaw 2.
Yeah, it definitely does. All right. So let's start getting to that. Let's get through something that should be more exciting than it is. And there are moments, but not enough. And this is Jess with a little money finally.
Yeah, Eurocine gave him a budget again. And we're back for a movie called Dark Mission. This kicks off a weird period in Jess's career that is star-studded. Whether or not that's a good thing, you will find out soon. I like this movie more than you do, I think. But I don't think it's excellent or anything. It's a, you know, pretty, it doesn't, honestly, the plot doesn't matter. It's basic setup, but, you know, just CIA, arms dealers, drug dealing. We get some fun, weird Che Guevara stuff in this because it's about Cuba. But basically, it's a weird vehicle for Jess to continue his hatred for drugs, which is strange. But thankfully, the reason I enjoy this one is because I think the one-liners are pretty funny, pretty consistently throughout. And if you combine that with most of the cast, I have a decent time. It's like throwing on, you know, like a bullshit 80s action movie that has enough silliness that I can enjoy. That's kind of what this one is for me. Because Christopher Lee is back.
Well, it is like that, but with very little action.
That's true. There's not a lot of action. You're right about that. Yeah. But yeah, Christopher Lee has come back. Thankfully, they clearly got over when Jess didn't tell Christopher Lee how much S&M was going to be in Eugenie, that he found out when he saw it and wasn't happy, but got over it. So Christopher Lee's back.
A tough, tall man to please.
That's scary. That voice. Can you imagine that voice being mad at you?
Oh. It's a good thing. Yeah, it's a good thing. He would be a very scary figure if he was a truly evil man.
Yeah. We also need a picture of him and Jess together because our little sweet little owl man next to that giant would be a wonderful photo.
That would be really funny.
Christopher Lee is great in this. Chris Mitchum, as always, is terrible in this because he's always terrible, always he's has terrible. Been.
So bad. Bridget.
Hugh LaHaye is great. Daniel Katz, Richard Harrison. This is a fun cast.
Richard Harrison, that's right.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, it's, you know, throw it on a hangover Sunday. I would say this is that kind of movie.
I would agree. I mean, there's some funny parts, like when he gets yelled at by the CIA officer Sparks at the beginning of the movie, which does make me think of that scene in Lynch's The Return where the FBI guy goes to, like, ask something, and then the FBI eight, like the head officer, like just responds so violently, so fast and so quickly. I don't know if there's a one-to-one there, but I mean, it's stuff like that keep you going through it. But there's a repetition that normally he's good doing that sometimes I think the repetition in this kind of slows it down, and you get a little bored by the constant use of certain locations. Because, listen, this man can't get away from his hotel rooms.
No.
He loves them. They're cheap.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, no, this is like, it's not bad, but it's not exciting enough to really, like, stamp it with too much.
No.
Other than just saying it's interesting.
Yeah. I mean, the big reason as well, I do like it. I actually liked this movie a lot more once I saw the others from this period, excluding one of them, because this is, for me, in large part, maybe the only one that I really revisit still often.
Well, I think it helped him get to make the next one.
Yes. Next up, y'all know this one. It should be your favorite Christmas movie, or at least in the regular rotation. This is the unfortunately named, but not slowed down by the name, Faceless.
Faceless. Yep. You silly horror nerds love to throw this one on and have a good laugh. And is it so bad it's good, or is it just good?
If I meet anyone who tells me this is so bad it's good, I might hit them. And, you know, I don't hit often, but.
Well, listen, maybe people are ready to accept it now in an era where we've had to suffer through crap like The Substance.
Movie that's so bad it's not good.
I mean, this is like on par on a much more perverse level, but I mean, it's almost like Death Becomes Her level satire of vanity.
Absolutely.
And it's, I don't know, I kind of disagree with Throw. I do think it's better to look at this as a perverse comedy rather than a horror movie.
Yeah, no, we've talked about that. We agree on it. Yes, technically, is this a bit of a medical slasher in some ways? Sure, but I think it's an acidic black comedy, really acidic black comedy. Very much first that also has some like slasher stuff sprinkled throughout.
And it's his biggest bloody one since Bloody Moon and Jack the Ripper.
Yep. And this is when Jess teams up with Renee Chateau, who also co-wrote the screenplay. And I do think they actually work really well together. Because I think Renee maybe seems to empower Jess to be a little meaner than he normally is. Jess normally does not bite this hard, unless it's just about like censorship or freedom, whatever. Like he just normally doesn't go this hard. And so I think it was a really happy little marriage between them. If you're not familiar with this movie, you probably are, but we're back to the awful Dr. Orloff storyline in a
It's like
couple.
just tackling the glitz of a JCPenney's catalog of the early 90s.
Yeah. With the least stepped on cocaine you've ever had. That shit is pure and it makes you insane.
I mean, the movie does kind of look and feel like a Every Kiss Begins with K commercial, you know, like it seems
With
like they're
that
trying to
music.
sell you rings and jewelry. And
Yep.
I think that's the kind of movie.
Yeah, the moment it starts with the what's his fucking name? Romano Musumara, who did the music and that amazing theme song, well, wrote it. Yeah, as soon as this opens, it feels weird because it does feel like exactly what you said. It feels like a weird Christmas ad for France.
Yeah, right.
For a second until we start to get into it.
Yeah, and then it turns into one of his most perverse, and I don't want to spoil a lot for people who haven't seen this, because it's, yeah, I mean, it's a doctor who's trying to do these face transplants for these women, these high society women. Some are not happy with him, but some are. So what he has to do is basically find a way to do that. He's not skilled enough. And he reaches out to a certain doctor. And I'm of two minds of this scene. I both hate it and love it. I hate it because it is not long enough. I hate it because it was also supposed to be the movie of this character taking over on the second half. Didn't come together. I don't know exactly why.
That's them. That's the one thing I don't like about him and Renee getting together, I guess, is Renee was
They said
very,
no. Yeah.
very adamant. He was like, nope. Because Renee also paid for this movie, for those of you that don't know, outside of also co-writing it.
Yeah. And it's a shame because that awful Dr. Orloff, played by fucking Howard Vernon again, is there in a cameo that has enough going for it to be exciting, but it's like, fuck, I could see this, you know, him going on so when he goes to go meet this doctor, he goes to meet Dr. Orloff, and he's greeted by Dr. Orloff's wife, whose name I believe is Melissa Innit, played by Lena Romay. So if you're playing along at home, that means he resurrected his daughter and married her.
Yes, which is incredible, and also I won't spoil it because again, it's part of the fun. One of the things that makes us so sad we can't at least see that version, right? Because I would just love to have both. I wish somehow they could have made both because I do love this movie very much. But one of the biggest swings they decided to take is they really, along with that incredible detail, they really flesh out Dr. Orloff's actual supposed background, and that is a risky
Yeah.
idea. And it shouldn't work and it should be stupid, but because of how acidic this movie is and how far it goes, it works perfectly. And it adds a really incredible layer for when you then go back and watch the other films in the Orloff legacy, now knowing what you know. This is one of the rare times I feel like a fucking comic book nerd because I'm like, oh my God, that just fucking changed everything forever.
Yeah, it adds a lot of depth to it.
Yeah,
And
a lot of weight, a lot of really, really dark weight.
yeah, and what's good, even though that doesn't have, like, we don't get more beyond this kind of like 5 to 6 minute scene, the Dr. Orloff's character recommends another surgeon, And we get that surgeon. And thankfully, that surgeon is very good in the movie. And because, listen, if he would have sucked at this role, Anton Differing, if he had sucked at this role, oh, boy, would you hate this movie. Because you're like, wait, they had Howard Vernon right there to do this?
But thankfully, he gives a like genuinely fucking amazing performance.
Chilling, too. Like the scene where he's fails on the first transplant and he takes his anger out is like still a very shocking scene and
very upsetting.
Yeah. And I mean, it's a dark, what this getting at, because they mentioned Mangala, and we're going to get to Mangala again later. I guess Mangala was on Jess's mind. But, you know, we all know about the good Dr. Joseph Mangala and his experiments. So, yeah, it adds a pretty dark level to this. And this is like one of the first times, I believe, that Nazis are explicitly referenced.
Sure. Yeah.
I mean, it's always been fascists up to this point. But this is the one where they name Nazi. They say, like, Nazis. Yeah.
There's also a funny, very specific joke that, like, calls France out for being part of arms dealing.
I think that's
why I get so passionate about this movie, I think, because it really is one of the densest. Even, you know, other films I like more because of different reasons. When we're talking about this kind of exploitation or comedy or horror, you rarely get something with this much to chew on. The more you rewatch this movie, the better it fucking gets. And that is not the case often with. There's a lot going on here. And you also, outside of Anton, I have to mention.
Run us down this fucking cast, please. Yeah. I mean, like, how are they all in a Jess movie?
Well, the thing that makes it okay that goddamn Chris Mitchum is here again, thankfully, he's going toe-to-toe with one of my favorite pieces of shit in history, Telly Savalas. I love
that. Not enough Telly Savalas, but hey, we'll take it.
Well, then they definitely also, because it's all in one, like, office room, and they definitely had Telly for, like, half a day before he was so fucking wasted that he'd kill someone again. So we get Telly.
It looked like he started a little early also, possibly.
Oh, I'm sure. Well, because Jess also famously knows how to deal with really difficult people very well. So I bet he just hung out with Telly and he was like, I got you, my dude. Don't worry about it. Just come through for these 5 hours and that's enough for the whole movie. Don't worry. And so this shit is just so legendary. So we have Stephanie Audran, who's very good in her role as well. We have Carolyn.
The former wife of Mr. Claude Chabrol.
That's right. That's right. Truly legends. Like, legends everywhere. And then for last, I had to save my favorite man. Helmut Berger shows up. And really, again, because every time this movie maybe has a scene or something, if it does, where it does have little missteps, then someone like Helmut Berger shows up and just brings the gravitas that these legendary European actors have with them. And it's incredible.
Like, I mean, he carries the movie. I mean, it's a good thing Helmut's in there to be the main character, because it's like, if Chris Mitchum were, this would be we would not be speaking of this movie as well, because it is like, well, I like it. It's barely hanging together.
That's part of the fun, though, I think, and why it feels so cocaine fueled. Because it feels like when you're around someone who's definitely really pushing it with the partying, right? And you're, you know, the kind of person that looks like they're like shaking a little bit all the time. You're like, you're about to tip. This movie feels like that, but it lands it. It sticks the landing. And the horror stuff that is there is very fun. The jokes almost all work. I guess last thing for me that made me laugh, I was listening to the commentary with Jess and Lena, which if you haven't listened to, is just a delight for fans. But Jess actually is like, of all people who does not care about gore effects, he says in the commentary multiple times, not happy with the effects. They didn't let us do what we wanted. And I was like, what? You can't? Okay. He's like, they're okay, but they could have been a lot better. I'm like, really? Okay. Jess.
Sounds like a little of that classic Jess bluster.
Yep. And then Lena, of course, is just giggling the whole time. Well, anytime the effects come up, she's like, that looks great. I like that one. Next up, we have...
Yeah, let's get to the next one here. Let's round this out. Okay. Esmeralda Bay. Stinks. But you know, we get some people again. You're going to say, who's in this?
Oh.
We have Fernando Rey. We have George Kennedy. Yeah, I mean, who really thought that they would show up in these kinds of movies? But they are, amongst Antonio Mayans and Robert Forster, you know, all your classics. But like, I mean, well, yeah, it's not Robert Forster. Wow, I just slid Robert Forster in as a stable in the Jess canon.
It is him in this one.
No, I know, but I said, oh, but Antonio Mayans and Robert Forster are back. Yeah. It's like, no.
Well, there's a fun, one of the fun things to get you through this movie is, as the heads know, like John just said, Antonio Mayans, when Robert Forster blew up, started using that name, because in Europe, you don't have to follow SAG rules. So he started using it, him and Jess, because it worked, right? You know, people recognize it, they come to see the movie. So he sheepishly came up to the real Robert Forster on set and told him that he'd been using his name.
This is awesome.
That's so awesome. That's fucking cool. We also have Brett Halsey, for you Fulci heads out there. I know we are.
That's
Brett
right.
Halsey is in this one.
Mr. Devil's Honey himself.
That's right. And yeah, this movie, you know, it's basically a bad political drama, which with way too much stock footage. It's nice how mean it is to the CIA, I guess.
It doesn't go as far. I mean, it references things that the CIA was doing in South America. So Jess clearly is aware, but it's like, just go a little bit harder on that, but that's okay.
Yeah. This is definitely, you get through it because the people that are there and fun little things about it. Like the guy who did the music, Luis Bacalov.
Great. I mean, just one of the best composers. Yeah.
He's incredible. And people will know him because Tarantino used two of his scores for Kill Bill 1 and 2 from Grand Duel and Summertime Killer. So, you know, it's pretty, pretty fucking legendary stuff.
He's an Academy Award winner for El Postino.
Yeah, this movie should absolutely rock. It doesn't, but it's also, you know, you're not going to die trying to get through it. You'll be okay. There's some good moments, but, you know.
Hey, everything you just said could apply to the next movie, too.
Yeah. Yeah.
All of the Eagles.
This is also the first of Jess's, I believe, fact check me if I'm wrong. This is the first straight-to-video movie. Not intentionally. It was bought for distribution, but they never put it out in theaters. So this one goes straight to video.
Had a lot of titles.
Okay.
I get to read the titles again. We're finally back to multiple titles.
Yes, lay them out. So this is Fall of the Eagles, also known as?
Also known as A Song for Berlin. The shooting title, which if the movie had been titled this and been a little bit more like what this is suggesting, probably would have been good. Lily, A Girl for the Soldiers. The other shooting title, Lily, A Song for Berlin. Okay, took them together. Alternate shooting title, War Song. The title reported in Variety, War Songs. Eagles Fall. It was released on DVD as Eagles Fall somewhere. And then a video title of Mission Eagle, The Last Attack.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's a lot of coming up with titles for a really, really boring movie. Just boring to the utmost. And it's like, you want to watch it because you have like a kind of bratty Mark Hamill, and you're like, all right, let's cook. And you got Christopher Lee, and it has again Nazis and all this shit going on, but
and the forgotten Estevez brother.
You're right.
You'll watch this movie and you'll be like, why do I know that voice? But that face isn't right. Because all the Estevez boys sound the same, is why. But this, unfortunately, if you ever thought to yourself, what if Jess made a flaccid war romance of yesteryear, and it was clearly inspired by Fassbender and Lily Marlene, but it was totally terrible and uninteresting, and also had stock footage from Oasis of the Living Dead, and felt like the exact opposite of Faceless as far as like energy and enthusiasm. Then you've got it. I hate this one.
Yeah, it really is bad. It has nothing going for it, and had it been in any way like close to trying to actually be some sort of Lily Marlene ripoff, maybe, but you know, it's painful to mention that movie or Fassbender's name in relation to some crap like this, but
yeah.
But that's how it is. Boy, it's gonna get easier on the next one.
Thankfully, this is the last one of this weird run of really famous people movies. Oh God, this fucking movie. Next up, it's called Downtown Heat. And part of this, I guess the only interesting thing since we're doing this journey here is this is not a Eurocine movie because Jess and Marius LeSueur got in big fights on Fall of the Eagles about all sorts of shit. Because I'm sure Jess was like, this movie is fucking boring. And Marius was like, no, it's not. It will do great on video because Mark Hamill's in it. And I'm sure he was right. But so they're really falling out at this point, which is where we begin to see the floor fall out of everything for Jess and crew. Because Marius is no longer on board. So this is just Jess and his crew doing it themselves. And this unfortunately basically shows that if Jess decided to be a shitty direct-to-video director in the 80s and 90s, he could have done it. Because he did it.
Feels like it. This one really is the one that feels the most like that. But without any of the fun stupidity to go along with it. Instead, we got Lena looking like something that rolled off of the Road Warrior leftovers set. You know, it's like
kind of, yeah, but with a little Liquid Sky. Like there's a weird like drugged out new wave punk kind of thing going on here that should be cool. It's not.
You also might think, are there going to be, listen, I'm playing along, are there going to be connections? I mean, Downtown Heat, Downtown, one of his better spy movies. No, there's no connection there. Oh, but wait, Melissa, the character is back. Yeah, in name only. Radix there? Sure.
Oh, Radix. I forgot.
But that's about it. And it's a boring time. And if Jess had just gone the way of being a straight-to-video kind of like make these quick action, and I use action very loosely with this movie. He doesn't know how to do action too well. Maybe you could try to start finding a way to understand this if that's the route he'd gone. But this is like, I mean, this is kind of his last attempt to, I mean, he doesn't go into that. Everything changes really almost from here on out. So
the one of the last people who was on his side and still giving him money. Because it could have, with the casts that they had in the last couple we talked about, this could have been the opposite effect. This could have been the moment where Jess gets like a Hollywood offer, you know? It's not that weird at that time in the 80s, creeping into the 90s for that to happen still. Because they're, I guess mostly, importing Hong Kong directors are starting to at that point. But it's not impossible to imagine that that could have happened. But instead, he couldn't, because he's Jess, and that's why we love him. He couldn't keep his fucking mouth shut and just do a job, because he can't, you know. And so instead we end up with this really painful Downtown Heat, which leads us into our second to last one for today.
And we should say, Jess kind of, I mean, yeah, it takes him 3 years to get to this next one.
Which is, as you guys know,
we can't just move past that.
That's
like
impossible. That's impossible.
3 years that Jess was not working. I mean, he was probably writing, right? Maybe he was looking for funding.
Because he gave up trying to get movies made for the most part and just started trying to cut together his buddy Orson Welles' Don Quixote film.
Well, that's right. That's right. Yep, of course.
Don Quixote, but when he tried to show it to people, when he got it put together, him and Lena, everyone fucking hated it. They were like, this sucks. And so Jess is even further down in the depths. And just to highlight how bad things get in these 3 years. So after the Don Quixote disaster, which I believe, I'd have to check my timeline, but basically the first 2 years of this gap is that in the third year, Jess is trying to get people to help him again. And when everything gets its lowest, guess who tells Jess no, that they will not give him money to make a movie? In my opinion, one of the worst things to hear ever. Like, one, asking these people for money, no thanks. Being told that they won't even help you, Troma fucking Studios. Lloyd goddamn Kaufman wouldn't even help Jess out. That's how low he is. He's begging trauma.
That's sad. Like, it's and so it's also sad. Like, fuck you, Lloyd Kaufman. You fucking.
Well, yeah. If we didn't need more reasons to hate him, like,
I God, I'm not. Yeah, I have never been a trauma guy. I have liked, but like, I like Macho Woman, but
that's not trauma.
That, I know they bought it. Yeah. But it's kind of crazy that they were buying stuff like that, but they were like, no, we don't want to even mess around with a guy. Because this is the stupid thing with Lloyd, among his many stupid things. I do think that would have worked, because clearly we're going to find out his fans just started funding stuff. So, like, you know, I think it would have worked. I think Lloyd could have moved some tapes. If you know,
well, it's easy too, because he was even like at that point, like the trauma stuff that they were making themselves isn't quite as, you know, like I think truly like soul destroying that it has been since the 90s, I guess. You know, and so come on, let Jess make one of those. Like it would have gone very well. But I mean, I guess in the end, I'm grateful in some ways because I don't want Lloyd Kaufman to be able to put his fucking hands on Jess. So I appreciate. That didn't work, I guess. So basically what happens, Jess is then like, okay, fuck. I'm going to get this shit done. And he revisits one of his favorite things, which is Edgar Allan Poe's The Gold Bug.
He tried to make many times? How many damn times is he trying to
tell you? I'll tell you exactly. I wrote it. So we have in 1979, he tried to make The Gold Bug. That didn't finish. Then he does Night of Open Sex. And then we have In Buscal, Dragon Dorado. And then he revisits it this time. And so all you can see of this movie, and I'll be quick, but there's a little over, it's almost 2.5 hour work print. That's all that survived of this movie. So some of it doesn't even have sound. A lot of it doesn't have music. But what we find, and I agree with Trevor very much on this, is like, if it feels like the movie that was going to come out of this, probably be 90 minutes, would be like if Golden Temple Amazons were good. There is quite a bit of energy in this, even with watching that kind of work print. Because if you settle in, you can see the passion. You can see that William Berger is back in this movie, and he's playing a hunchback named Dr. Quasimodo.
But Quasimoto.
Moto, yeah, great joke there. And we it's also
so, have, so just so, the just barely trying as a joke.
Yeah, but it. I don't know. I think it works. I really do see a movie in this one that I think we would have fun with. And we also have Charlie Sistervaris, who, if y'all don't know, that is the son of Geraldine Chaplin, who is the daughter of Charlie Chaplin. So he's now in the fold. So we have Charlie Chaplin's grandson in Jess Franco jungle movie.
Why not?
But yeah, I mean, to me, we can stop on this one, I guess. Just it's important for the last film we're going to talk about, I think. This is the last time we get what I think. And when I say pure Jess, I don't mean necessarily pure as far as quality. I mean, this is a man who still doesn't know that he does have legions of fans and doesn't know what they do or don't like about his movies. So I guess we'd call it in some ways, not exactly with the timeline, but kind of a, this is the last like pre-internet Jess Franco thing that we could have had. And so it still has that energy of like trying to make a big movie with no money. Yeah. And then we have another gap of 3 years before what John alluded to or said earlier, Jess gets reached out to by some people, this guy named Kevin Collins, who was planning on doing a career spanning interview with Jess.
He was basically retired at this point, we should say. Jess was considering he was in retirement. Yeah.
He's done. But he does this interview with Kevin Collins, and there's some other people. But basically, fans found Jess, reached out to him, and decided they wanted to help him make a movie. So someone had mentioned to him this band they thought he would like and want to make a movie with called The Killer Barbies. And Jess was like, that works great for an idea I had about a band being stranded and then staying at a castle overnight and shit goes down. This is the only one. That's why we split the episodes here, because everything we'll talk about in the next one is going to be in the world of one shot productions. which this definitely led to. But this one, Killer Barbies, last time we really get, not last, but as far as shot on film, we really get a bit in the good moments of a gothic vampire film from Jess.
But what we get with the it being shot on film, yes, is we get finally back to this gloomy, sort of like spooky, you know, what he can do well with lighting. And it does feel like we are getting closer back to those early gothic Jess movies. However, the film only goes so far. This is the result of a lot of post work to adjust those colors. This is apparently the first time he really went wild in the post. So
some of these people who reached out to him were very much in the world of digital things and big fans of what you could do with those digital manipulations. And they got old retired Jess real excited about it.
Yeah. And it looks cool. Like, it looks great. This is a tough one to sit through just because of the Killer Barbies.
It is. Cause I really like this movie. I really do. The only things that are tough for me, and I can, we grew up in the era. We can suffer through some, I'll be insulting because I don't think they're very good. We can say, we can suffer through some pop punk when we need to. It's fine.
No problem. This is pop punk of.
It's painfully.
Hardboard pop punk. This is.
Well, yeah, it's just pastiche, like at best even, because I don't even know if it's that. But it's just, it's not. It's nothing new. It's cookie cutter pop punk, whatever.
It's Euro trash crap, is what it. And the problem is not even how stupid the songs are. It's that they're used over and over.
And you've heard us say we love that sometimes in jazz, but in this, it really gets grating. And then the other thing that's so hard, and why I mentioned it with Jungle of Fear, we now have a Jess a little bit more insecure, and he'll find his footing again that you'll hear when we talk about some of the other films that remain. But we have a Jess who's a little more insecure, and so he's surrounded by these really young people who are like, this is what you should do. You should have these like super self-aware postmodern style jokes in your movies. That's what you're missing. And Jess has winked at the camera many times. It's usually in the sex comedies, but it's usually brief. But in this one, it goes so far as like one of the Killer Barbies. I think it might actually be Geraldine Chaplin because she's not actually in that band, but she's one of the Barbies in the movie. It's only two of the band. Anyway, they walk into this fucking castle and she like looks at something and is like, that totally looks like a horror film. And it breaks your heart. It hurts. It hurts seeing Jess. Because again, I do still like this movie, but moments like that, quotes like that happen multiple times in this movie. And every time that happens or the band comes back, it just hurts because you're like, what do you, don't do our boy like that.
No, exactly. Because again, like you said, it's a creepy plot. It's closer to a horror movie. There's
pretty
a lot
cool. of. It's a cool movie. We get vampires again. We get fucking, what's her name?
Burial Ground. Yeah.
Yeah, Olga Luchan, who's kind of doing like the Countess Bathory female vampire kind of shit again.
Has a face that kind of reminds you of the face of the dead mom in Bloody Moon. It is kind of a little Orloffian in the sense that it's someone trying to restore this. Yeah, Countess Bathory type figure with young blood. And that's all this is. There's not much to it. That's what's going on. And this gang of shitty musicians who just fuck all the time. And they're so stupid and bad. Yeah. And they just get chased around by this guy and his manservant that I guess
has
perverse relations with his two dwarf children.
Yeah, the dwarf buddies, whatever the relation. His name is Balthazar. Yeah, Balthazar in this, who's like the Morpho stand-in, but for some reason, yeah, just fucks these little people all the time. And this, I don't know, I would never, like, it's just because I think it makes me sad more than anything. I wouldn't even put this towards the bottom with some of the truly bad ones in the Jess canon. I do think this movie is still worthwhile and fun, and like you said, can be really lovely to look at. So don't, I would say don't be deterred, and like, especially once it was restored, looked really great from Redemption. But yeah, it's just a bummer to see he comes back. You're so excited. Jess is back. And you see what they fucking did to him. These kids need to leave his old ass alone. Because guess what? He knows better than you do fucking killer Barbies.
And yeah, like I said, like the elements are there. They even get those stuffed animals from all the way back in Count Dracula.
The taxidermy returns.
And yeah, and that's cool. Again, why we're stopping here before we get to the last chapter of this long, over a year long endeavor. You know, there is still enough here to chew on, but it is only for the heads. If you are just kind of starting this journey out, do not go down the killer Barbies route. Don't. No, not even for just a curiosity. Just wait and come back to it, because you're going to dismiss it entirely. But you give some time, you're really swimming in it, you put it on, and you do get to see, at least it's fascinating, because the glimpses of that aura, of that dreamy stuff can still exist concretely as the image. But what's going on with it? You know, that's what's changed. And maybe Jess just didn't care as much. And maybe he just wanted to get back to atmospherics.
I think he was just so hungry to get to make a movie that he let these, I really do. I think he let the people around him who were these fans influence what he was going to put on screen. Cause he was like, that's a tale of all this time with Jess. Like, he's like, well, it's fucking worth it if I get to work, whatever. Sure. I'll do it. You know? So,
and unfortunately, it was not the last we'll see of the Barbies.
It's not. But thankfully, before we get to that, there's a lot we are excited to chew on. Next time, we'll be back kicking it off with film Tender Flesh, which joins a handful of other movies that were, us included, for a lot of years, thought were shot on video because they sure fucking look like it. And we'll talk about why and how that is, because that's a handful of movies that were shot on Super 16 millimeter and then handled in a really strange way after the fact. And then we will dive headlong into the SOV and finish this motherfucker out with y'all. So yeah.
We can't wait to, the cat needs to be fed, I guess. I guess that's my cue, but yeah, we can't wait to close this out in a way that is gonna feel finally exciting again, not us just having to rush through kind of the end to highlight some gems, but mostly a lot of trash. So this is going to be really fascinating. You could probably guess it's not going to come out quick on the heels of this, but I think we both deserve to maybe go back and take a look at some of those again to kind of do this proper. So
it's worth it. A little tease, I will say, as I have been going back through yet again through the ones we're going to talk about, I have, you know, two that I previously called pretty fucking good. You know, there's something there, whatever, that I now think are really close to belong in the top of the stuff that we talk about with Jess when he's really on fire. So I'm pumped. Also, I'm pumped because you and I have not, for the most part, outside of one of the ones that we showed, we haven't talked that much about this with each other. So it's going to be a fun episode two to see where we align and where we don't, you know.
Yeah, we're going to land on a very similar problem that plagues them all, but what is that problem? You're going to find out. Sometimes it's a problem. I'm sure Will will find an excuse to say one is not. But generally, this is going to be the issue. But we're going to highlight a lot of gems that have been buried in this very slept on period. The episode we just did, that's the stinky period.
That's the toughest one, genuinely. The toughest period of his career.
A few diamonds in the rough, but This is one you're going to want to tune into. So until we get to that, this has been a long one, but we've kept you waiting for so long, and eventually we can start doing other things, and that'll be cool. And hey, guess what? Francomania, the tour, it's not dead yet.
No, we're sleeping, man. We're taking a breath, but next year it's going to be back bigger, better, and most importantly, with a lot more fucking wisdom going into it. And how it works, so that it will, you know. So maybe you might hear about it before 3 days. We're gonna do a goddamn press release. Get ready. Yes,
we're gonna get it going. So until then, everybody, go Chiefs, and we'll see you next time.
Fucking stuff.
nothing to hang your head on. I'm losing to them, but we feel like we can play better. So we'll get back to work and try to use this as a spark so that we can be a better football team in the end. And the undefeated thing was cool, but that's not our ultimate goal. So we'll keep building towards that.